Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. We are also going to talk about, in honor of Game of Thrones last night, the series finale, we are going to talk about the best and worst series finales, TV series finales of all time. And we're going to be talking about some Chicago phrases that don't make our city look very good. So that's all coming up. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, it is Monday, and that means we're going to review the new movies. Busy weekend for the Chicago film critics. The Chicago Critics Film Festival started on Friday and will continue through the week. So we're going to get an update on that. Eric Childress, Jim Leskowski joined me to talk about the new movies, and we'll talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So let's get to Eric. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again.
All right. My producer Tom came out to see Alien on Saturday night.
He certainly did.
And so, Tom, tell us a little bit about, that was your first time seeing it on the big screen, right?
Yes, that is correct. I had, first time I saw it was about 10 years old on VHS.
Yeah.
And that was in a time when DVD was prevalent, and I still watch it on VHS. So it was really a biblical experience. It was really a special experience because it is a film franchise that I love so dearly. That includes the Alien versus Predator movies. I bat for those, even though they are objectively terrible.
What?
Yeah, he likes the Alien versus Predator movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But that was your first time seeing it on the big screen, so that must have been really cool. Because I've seen it. I'm old.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm an old man. I saw it on the big screen when it first came out in 70 in 70 millimeter, not 1970. It was 1979 when it came out. But I saw it several times in the theater, so I have had that great experience of seeing it. But it must have been really cool, especially at the Music Box of a Full House.
Yeah, it was incredible. People were really jazzed up for it. And there were some people in the house that had never seen Alien at all.
How is that possible?
I know.
It was one of them was my mom.
Your mom had never seen Alien?
Nope.
Wow. What did she think?
She's not a scary movie person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but she was there with a friend of mine who also brought his mom, who had never seen the movie before.
Wow.
yeah, and my mom legitimately loved it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, listen, they did not seen the movies before, but they were aware of,
they
know the chestburster scene and all that stuff. Was that something that they were conscious of?
I think in some, like, the back of their mind kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're aware of that, that's a scene that happens and stuff like that. So, but my mom likes to say she's, you know, forgets what she had for breakfast. So if it was there, it probably didn't strike her while she was watching the movie.
Let me tell you something, man. I was 14 when that movie came out. And that chestburster scene, I'm telling you, nobody had ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think people realize just what a game breaker that was. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just like I remember sitting in the theater, and it was seriously. I think it was like a month after I saw Phantasm. It was a good summer. It was a good summer for horror. 79 was a good summer for horror. There was a lot of really good horror movies that came out. They finally released Dawn of the Dead that summer. In 79. So it was like Dawn of the Dead, Phantasm, Alien. They were all out there at the same time. The Frank Langella Dracula came out that summer, which is a movie that I actually really like. And I know a lot of people hate it, but I like it. So it was a good thing. But I'm telling you, that chestburster scene, everybody in the theater was like, what just happened? And I mean, the biggest reaction, of course, Veronica Cartwright's reaction is unbelievable in the thing, because they didn't tell the cast. Ridley Scott didn't tell the cast what was going to happen. Veronica Cartwright, like, really lost her stuff, and you could see it in the movie too. Like, she completely freaks out she's freaked out the entire movie. She's the one that freaks out the most the entire movie. But that was a big deal, man. And the movie itself was just so. It was different than anything that had been out. And I thought it was just going to be like a regular sort of a sci-fi movie. And at that time, you know, we were a couple of years outside of Star Wars, and it was that. And I thought, oh, it's going to be, you know, like this little sci-fi movie, you know, with spaceships. And then I was like, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah.
The cast is just so, everybody in that cast is so great. I mean, Harry Dean Stanton and Yaphet Kotto, for God's sake. I mean, you know, but I love everybody. Of course, obviously, the breakout star was Sigourney Weaver. Nobody knew who she was.
Right.
At that time. And, you know, I was 14. The underwear scene. I mean, come on, man.
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about? Last 10 minutes of that movie, I'm like, whoa! So.
Yeah, I still remember, because, you know, I saw that movie at a way too young age. I was about 5, maybe 6 years old.
Good Lord!
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the people across the street, my best friend at the time, they have the first ones in the block to have a VCR. You know, so they had movie night, and it was always horror movies. Every movie night they'd invite neighbors over, it was always horror night.
Yeah.
And my dad and I watched Alien, and I still remember that underwear scene you're referring to. And I never forget, to this day, someone in the living room goes, oh, that's what the alien was waiting for.
yeah. No, it's pretty memorable. That's all I'm saying. All right, well, we're going to get to see Sigourney Weaver. I'm going to get to see Sigourney Weaver on the big screen again in a couple of weeks, because I'm showing Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's awesome.
At my film club. It's it's the 35th anniversary.
I know.
I feel like I'm 90. So we're going to show Ghostbusters on the big screen. If you guys want to get your tickets, it's amctheaters.com. It's Tuesday, June 11th. Tuesday, June 11th starts at 8 o'clock. And the tickets are going really, really quickly, so you might want to reserve your seats now. So go to amctheaters.com. There's a lot of hardcore Ghostbusters fans I'm discovering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I understand that people are actually going to come in full costume.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So there's going to be some actual Ghostbusters there. So anyway, so that's Sigourney Weaver. Well, I'm glad. Yeah. And Tom Skerritt, cool guy.
Oh my God! Yeah. Tom Skerritt was amazing. Yeah. I got to have dinner with him last night.
Yeah.
And what's awesome about Tom Skerritt is that he's actually, you know, he's not acting as much as he was, and not because of his age, is because he's actually going into forming like a little production company kind of thing for people making short films.
Oh, wow.
So he actually, before we had Tom Skerritt on board to come to the festival, before he committed, Colin, you know, Suter, who programs our shorts programs, actually programmed a short where Tom Skerritt actually narrates one of the shorts.
Hmm.
And Tom Skerritt was, you know, just doing some interviews yesterday, and was going to then be there for Alien, obviously. But when he heard about the shorts, he said, "I want to come see the shorts." So he came in the middle of the afternoon, saw the shorts, then did interviews, and he went on stage and was like praising all the filmmakers. There, Colin had 6 of the directors from the shorts there, and Tom Skerritt.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah. That was unnecessary of him.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Wow. And he was just up there basically, I mean, he was given a little wisdom about Hollywood and the new direction that film is going and things like that, and then was, you know, really gave like praise and like, you know, background notes and things like that to the filmmakers that were up on stage. So it was a pretty cool moment.
That's
and
awesome.
he wasn't there to suck the attention away from all the filmmakers. Colin, he said he won't, you know, he'd be happy to be up on stage with them, but he didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So he just, you know, he just basically praised the filmmakers.
Wow, that's great. That's
really
cool.
Really a hell of a guy, seriously.
And how did the Nightingale go last night?
Oh my gosh. The Nightingale, Aisling Franciosi, who the star of the film, was there. At the end of the movie, she got a standing ovation.
Mm.
Yeah, the film I could tell was playing really well with the crowd. They were clearly very into it. It's a rough movie,
yeah.
And it's there were some people that had to leave the theater for a little while during some of the more intense stuff.
Yeah,
but they went back in.
Mm-hmm.
Like they wanted to see where the story took them, and Jennifer Kent's a hell of a filmmaker.
Yeah. I had to get some sleep, Eric. So I missed out on it. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, you guys, we're gonna review the. We only had a couple of movies to review, and someone's okay. We got to take a little break because someone's having a coughing fit. But we'll take a break. Okay, you guys, hang on. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we'll talk a little bit more about the Chicago Critics Film Fest because it's going all the way through Thursday, and we want to hear some of the other stuff that's happening during the week. And then we got a couple of new movies to review, and all that's coming up right after we. And we'll do the box office as well. That's all coming up after this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we're here until 5. We're going to be talking about best and worst TV finales, considering there was a pretty big one last night. I mean, of course, Barry. No, I'm sorry. Game of Thrones. And we'll get to those series finales a little bit later on. Right now, though, it's time for the movie reviews. Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to review the movies. And let's get these guys back on. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay, so Eric, tell everybody a little bit more about what's going on for the rest of the week for the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
Yeah, as crazy as the weekend has been, we still have four more days of this thing that are going on, and we have major guests every single night. It's tonight, Monday night, we're showing Lulu Wang's The Farewell with Awkwafina. Lulu Wang is going to be there for Q&A afterwards, and if people are interested in going, you may want to jump on the Music Box Theater website and buy tickets because that's looking very close to being a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
People that thing has been selling great all week. That's Monday night. Tuesday night is the night that I'm so excited for. We're showing the movie Pink Wall, and Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black is going to be there, and this might be as geeked out as I've ever been putting on this festival.
Yeah,
not only the fact because we tried to get her 3 years ago to come in for a movie, and we were so close, we couldn't get it to work. Her and Tom Cullen actually were in this movie together 3 years ago, and now she's coming in. He's coming in because he directed the movie, and we got Jay Duplass as a bonus for all that. And so all three of them are going to be at the Music Box Tuesday night. That's also one you want to sort of jump on and get your tickets for. Wednesday is the movie that Steve Prokopy really loved from Sundance this year called Blinded by the Light, the story of this British teenager who discovers Bruce Springsteen and basically changes his life. I hear it's just a fantastic crowd-pleasing movie, especially if you love Bruce Springsteen. So that's going to be Wednesday night, and the star of the movie and the director are going to be there for that. And then Thursday night, 6 o'clock, we're playing a movie called Loose that with Naomi Watts and Octavia Spencer that also got a lot of praise at Sundance. That's one that I'm actually going to be sitting through because I didn't get to see that one. But that people have seen it say it's Octavia Spencer's best work.
Really?
And it's a real, it's a hell of a movie.
Okay.
And then their closing night movie At 8:30 p.m. on Thursday. It's called Light from Light. A few years ago, we closed with David Lowery's A Ghost Story. This is actually another ghost story, a different kind of ghost story. Not a horror movie by any stretch. It's a movie about grief and loss, starring Maren Ireland and Jim Gaffigan, who is going to be there as part of the Q&A, along with the director and the producer. This is a really beautiful movie and one of the real movies this whole festival that sticks the landing in a way that's really going to pull on your heartstrings.
All right. Well, that's all going on right now at Music Box Theater throughout the week. Get your tickets now for these great screenings and these great guests. So it's the Chicago Critics Film Festival and continuing through the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. So there you go. All right, Eric, tell us about All Creatures Here Below.
Okay. Well, speaking of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, this is actually the new film from director Colin Shifley and writer and star David Desmalchin. They had the closing night film at the festival some years ago called Animals. And this is this story. David Desmalchin play and Karen Gillan play lovers, working class lovers. He works at a pizza shop. She works for a church and sort of odd jobs around town. And they're basically their lives kind of come to a crossroads. He gets fired from his pizza job. Karen Gillan's character is kind of a childlike sensibility towards her. She might partially be mentally challenged. That's things that we'll be discovering throughout the movie. They each take a bit of a leap in where their lives are going to go. When he goes to a cockfight, and circumstances lead him to doing something possibly really dangerous there. And she ends up fixated on the neighbor's baby that is not being taken care of, and she kidnaps the baby. And these two lovers end up going on the run, whether or not they can get away with what they're doing, whether or not they're going to survive this entire trip and this relationship that they've culled together. And that's the basic driving plot of the movie, which has a number of different twists and turns that I don't want to reveal, obviously. This is a very bleak film. Animals was a film about lovers on the run, also lovers on the run, but they were junkies, they were con artists, heroin addicts, any kind of drug for the most part, but there's kind of a spiritual redemption for the two of them as they try to actually better themselves. These characters are stuck on the run. There's not really a lot of chance for betterment, whether or not they can really even save themselves out of the situation that they're in, given that their combined intellect is just not working for them. So it leads to sort of one bad situation after another. And yet, because of the performances, you're trying to stay with them. You're trying to root for them. You don't see them as bad people, just maybe not really smart ones that made a lot of really poor decisions. They're not, again, they're just not horrible people. Even if they do some questionable things throughout the film, and the more that's revealed about them, it's kind of a crossroads between empathy and scorn for them. And I think the driving force of this movie are the two performances by Desmalchin and Gillan. Gillan, I think, is having a hell of a year. I think she gives one of the best performances in Endgame. I think she's one of the best things about that movie, performance-wise. And I think she's tremendous here as well. Desmalchin has been a guy that we've seen a lot, since he's kind of broken out, popping up in little small roles throughout. Obviously, he's in both of the Ant-Man movies, and he's very funny there. This dude is a hell of an actor, and again, it's really hard creating characters like this that you really do care about, even though you know that their fates might be sealed and might actually be deserved as well. So, again, this is not a movie that is going to strike the right balance for everyone. It's a tough movie to sit through, especially the more that you find out about these characters. But at the same time, I had a real sense of empathy for them, and I was with it towards the end. There's a very sort of John Steinbeck-like quality to this film. And I like it very much.
Okay, that's all Creatures Here Below. By the way, David Dismelchin is has spent a significant amount of time here in Chicago.
Yes,
went to DePaul and has appeared frequently on Svengoolie.
Oh yes, huge Svengoolie fan.
Yeah, he is a massive Svengoolie fan.
Yes,
so I just love the fact that he just pops up every once in a while.
Yes.
So all Creatures Here Below. There you go. All right. Well. All right, Jim. Tell us about John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is the third entry in the series from director Chad Stahelski. And like its predecessor, Chapter 3 Parabellum picks up immediately after the ending to the previous John Wick movie. John, of course, is played by the one and only Zen Master Keanu Reeves. And when we last saw him at the end of Chapter 2, John had just broken the Continental's number one rule, which is no business or any violence will be conducted on hotel grounds.
Right. All right. Okay, Jim, hang on. Hang on a second. We got to take a break.
Okay.
All right, we'll get back to the plot we'll get back to the plot of John Wick Chapter 3 right after we take this break here, and then we'll review it. Eric didn't get a chance to see it. He was busy at the Music Box all weekend, so he didn't get a chance to see John Wick 3, but we will review it. Jim and I will review it right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about best and worst TV series finales. And no spoilers, obviously, for the Game of Thrones folks out there. But we're going to talk about series finales. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Before the break, Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski are with me. We're reviewing the new movies. The big one that opened up this week, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. Jim was telling us about it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
All right. Thanks.
All right. So continue with telling us about John Wick. It picks up right where the second one ends.
Yes, and at the end of the second chapter, John killed Santino D'Antonio, and that has definitely caused some trouble, to say the least, in this grand mythology that the John Wick series has established. So at the very beginning here, he has less than an hour before a $14 million contract on his life is opened to every single assassin in both New York City and the world at large. He manages to briefly find passage out of New York with the help of a powerful figure and ally played by Angelica Houston. And meanwhile, there's also this villain character that's introduced to us, a rather stark and stoic woman known as the Adjudicator, I believe, or the Adjudicator, I think that's how you say it. And she's played by Asia Kate Dillon, and she's been dispatched by the High Table to get to the bottom of the illegal killing that occurred at the Continental that's gotten John Wick into such hot water here. And we also have the delightful Mark Dacascos, who's an incredibly skilled martial arts expert, and he plays Zero here, and he's, you know, essentially a sushi stand proprietor who's also just one of many of the world's millions of assassins that are just kind of all tucked in different corners of the world. And Zero has been hired by the educator to give John Wick a very hard time, which he does in a very long and, you know, spectacular fight at the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie. But also on Zero's to-do list is Lawrence Fishburne's Bowery King, who presides over the city's homeless and coordinates their secret spying activities. And, of course, we know from the second film that Lawrence Fishburne's character is also, you know, he's helped out John Wick, and now he's in trouble as well. And he also might play a significant role in how things play out. Not to mention that we have returning regulars from the other two chapters that include Ian McShane and Lance Riddick, who will stop at nothing to protect their property and uphold the traditions and high expectations surrounding service at the infamous Continental. So can John Wick survive all this madness and mayhem that is about to befall? And if you've seen the others in this franchise, you know that John Wick can kind of take care of and defend himself like very few can. So, yeah, that's pretty much the gist of the plot. And the first film in this series I thought was really good and didn't necessarily reach levels of greatness for me in the way that the sequel did pretty much from beginning to end. I think sometimes these films do get a little bogged down in the mythology and the world building, but it's still cloaked in this kind of slick coolness, especially when you have such an incredible array of characters and actors here, like Ian McShane and Lance Riddick, just sort of popping up as supporting players. And Chapter 2 really felt like a step up, particularly with how beautifully orchestrated the action sequences were. And for me, Chapter 3 is pretty much right on par with its predecessor. It succeeds best for me as a spectacle. And when Keanu basically gets to do these martial arts set pieces, I'm 100% on board. I mean, there are definite moments where it kind of turns into a little bit of a first-person shooter when the guns come blazing. And that, to me, I don't necessarily grow tired of it, but it's just not as jaw-dropping as some of the earlier action set pieces, particularly one involving knives that kind of made me giddy. And we also have other characters that show up, like Halle Berry at one point. And that whole sequence is pretty remarkable. But yeah, I mean, I think the filmmakers here really do conjure up a world in which a super secret agency can order these virtually public executions and pull them off without a trace. And it's kind of fun to watch all these chess pieces come into play and how is it all going to play out. But really, there is just no greater joy than watching Keanu Reeves just kick butt for 2 hours. And this really does deliver as successfully as the last installment did. I mean, and one thing that did surprise me, and I'm not going to give anything away, of course, is that, you know, this becomes a bit of a setup for another chapter, which I guess I didn't expect, but at the same time, it does leave you with a lot of anticipation for what the next episode might be due to a possible teaming up of two characters in particular that I'm not going to spoil, obviously. Part of me thought that, you know, this is chapter 3, maybe this is just a trilogy, and everything's going to be resolved, and this John Wick arc would find closure, but it's clear the filmmakers want to continue and move forward, which doesn't bother me because I've become a fan of this series, particularly these last two chapters. I mean, what else can you say about a sequence that includes two dogs chomping on the testicles of bad guys while Halle Berry is shooting multiple bad guys at once? So that's pretty much what you're in for. It really is slam-bang entertainment at its most energetic, and I'm constantly amazed by the kind of stunts and action sequences they pull off together. And I rarely mind the downtime in between everything. So as I kind of expected, I am definitely recommending John Wick Chapter 3 because it is pretty damn good.
All right. Yeah, I really liked it. I didn't like it as much as the second one. I still think the second one's the best one of the series. But there's stuff in this movie that's jaw-dropping. I also love the fact that one of the big major fights in the movie is between Keanu and the chairman from Iron Chef America. That's something right there.
That is a joy.
I was like, wait a minute, hold on. That's the guy from Iron Chef America, and he's like a total badass martial artist. I had no idea. I just thought he was Iron Chef America's chairman. So that was kind of a delight. Lots of great. Mm-hmm. I mean, the action sequences in this movie are fantastic. The fight scenes are amazing. There is a, like you mentioned, that's particularly incredible. Fight sequence in a hallway that's just filled with shelves covered in glass that just happen to have knives behind them.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the number of shards of glass that are broken in this movie. I mean, Keanu himself goes through about 50 walls of glass, gets thrown through about 50 walls of glass in the movie. And I also love the fact that, like, to put one person down, he puts like 12 bullets into one person a piece. You know, it's like not just one shot to the head, like eight. These movies are known for their incredible fight sequences, and this one doesn't disappoint at all. I just think it gets bogged down a little bit with because I really don't care about the plots of these movies. I just want to see Keanu, you know, kick ass and kill people.
Sure.
That's what I want to see. But sure, when we get into this whole, like, the Continental this and we the this and blah, 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 I was like, all right, I don't care about this stuff. Just get back to people getting their heads bashed in, because that's what I wanted to see. So the mythology gets a little bit heavy for me in this one. And I think they could have cut some of that stuff out, tightened up the movie to because it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes long. They could have tightened it up like 10, 15 minutes by cutting a little bit of the blah, blah, blah stuff out. But as far as, like, action sequences go, they're some of the best. I mean, dog parkour, for God's sake. Holly Berry, by the way, really kicks ass in this movie, too. She's great.
Oh yeah,
and her dogs are fantastic, and that whole sequence, you know, is amazing. Once the movie gets going, once the action sequences kick in, they're very, very hard to top. There's insane shootouts and insane fight scenes, and again, Keanu is fantastic in it, and I just love the fact that, like, he and Morpheus are reunited. That just makes me happy that Neo and Morpheus get to hang out together again. That just gives me joy too. It was nice to see Angelica Houston. I hadn't seen her on screen in a long time, and she's really effective in it. This is, you know, if you're in for the ride on these John Wick movies, this pays off. I just don't think it's quite as good as the second one, but I'm highly recommending it, because it's just these John Wick movies, they kick ass. There's just no question about it. And man, did it make money. Wow. So yeah. So, all right. Well, what do we got next week?
We got Aladdin. Booksmart,
which I'm looking forward to. Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis have been making the rounds on the talk show circuit, so I'm really looking forward to that too. All right, well, Jim, thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Okay. Talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week. There you go. There's Jim and Eric. We're going to take a break, okay, man?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk box office. Eric Childress is going to stick around. We'll talk about the box office right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Monday morning. We're going to talk about the best and worst TV finales of all time, considering a massive TV finale happened last night with Game of Thrones. We'll jump into that. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. Right now, though, we just reviewed all the new movies. There weren't that many. There were only two to review. And we talked a little bit about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. with Eric Childress. And Eric is still here, and we're going to talk box office. Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Were you surprised by how much John Wick made? It made $57 million, and we were talking like 30-something last week, right?
Yeah, we were talking about how I thought that it was going to be close between that and Avengers. I think I gave the edge to John Wick, but I thought it was going to be, you know, like 30-something to 30-something.
Yeah.
And no, John Wick apparently is a much bigger deal than I had ever imagined.
I gotta say, these movies have built up in popularity. You know what I mean? Like the first one was just kind of this minor thing.
Yeah.
The second one was a solid hit, and I'll tell you something, man. We went Saturday afternoon, and there was not an empty seat.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those rare movies that has really built its audience after they've left theaters. I mean, John Wick Chapter 2 did fairly well, but this is, like, taking it to the next level. This has gone from, kind of a little cult, hit, video hit, and is now turning to something just like, yeah, bring on Chapter 4. The audiences are clearly down for it.
Yeah, no, they are, and it was a very enthusiastic crowd that we saw it with, and it delivers, man. It delivers, you know, if you like the John Wick movies, it's got everything that you want from a John Wick movie. $57 million, that's really unbelievable.
It's actually the second best opening in Keanu Reeves' career.
What was his? What's the first?
The first Matrix.
The first
sequel.
Matrix. Oh, yeah. The first Matrix sequel. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah, Reloaded.
Is the best opener. And actually, Matrix Revolutions, it opened on a Wednesday, but if you took either 3 days, Wednesday to Friday or Friday to Saturday, John Wick beat both of them.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow. Okay, well, that's it. That's it right there, man. John Wick. Number two, obviously, Avengers Endgame, $29 million. It's up to $770 million in America alone.
Yeah, officially has beaten Avatar domestically for all time. It's very unlikely it's going to topple The Force Awakens domestically, but it's only $173 million away from topping Avatar worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. $2.61 billion the movie has made.
Yeah, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. It's 4 weeks it's been, and it's fourth week, almost $30 million for its fourth week. I mean, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Man. All right. This Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
$24 million.
Yeah.
And $94 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of coming in right where a little bit more than what I expected it to do ultimately. So I mean, this movie is sort of looking like somewhere between 160 and 170 million, which for a Pokemon movie is you would think is pretty good. Of course, the movie cost $150 million.
Jeez.
I don't think it's opened in all of the Pokemon markets overseas.
Yeah.
It's made a little over $200 million worldwide. It's going to have to make a lot more than that to break even, though.
Yeah. Okay. Fourth place is A Dog's Journey, which was a sequel to The Dog's Purpose.
Correct.
$8 million.
Yeah. I actually refuse to see these movies. I'm sorry. I don't need to see a movie where a dog dies like six times.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the first one. I didn't see this one.
Not many people did, apparently. And the first one was a surprise little hit.
Yeah.
The first one opened to $18 million and finished with $64 million. This one made $8 million and may not make $25 million.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Number five. Ooh, well, boy, The Hustle.
Yeah.
$6 million, $23 million in 2 weeks, and it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, The Hustle, it depresses me when you go start, you're in this portion of the list and you see how much Longshot has made.
Yeah.
And that the fact that The Hustle is actually going to outgross Longshot.
Yeah.
Makes me sick.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Number six, The Intruder. Look at that. Dennis Quaid all over the place.
Yeah.
28. Also beating Longshot, The Intruder. $4 million this week, $28 million in 3 weeks. And then Longshot, number seven, with only $3.4 million, $25 million in 3 weeks, which is terrible.
That's a failure. This is such a failure on Lionsgate's part. You know, there's like, they're so concentrated on John Wick. They buried, they thought that they could give Longshot, counter programming legs next to Avengers Endgame, but it just got swallowed.
Yeah. which is really too bad.
Yeah.
It really is too bad, because Longshot is a really, really entertaining and terrific movie. All right, and then number nine, Palms. Nobody's going to see that, which
No.
We talked about this last week. I'm surprised that nobody's going to see it. I thought
I'm kind of shocked, too.
I thought they were going to tap into an audience that's there, clearly.
Yeah, apparently not.
Or not. And then number 10 is Ugly Dolls.
Yeah, that's an STX double failure right there at nine and ten slots.
$17 million in 3 weeks.
Mm.
Yeah, and it costs what? $45 million.
It sells $45 million for Ugly Dolls. Yeah,
that's insane. That's completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are we looking at next week? Is Wick going to stay on top?
Not with Aladdin opening.
Oh, Aladdin. That's right. I keep forgetting.
Yeah,
about Aladdin.
But I think that. You know, Disney is, you know, probably got a lot of money built up in this Aladdin thing. I don't think it's going to do as good as they think.
Oh, I don't think so either. I mean,
yeah.
I, you know, I mean, it looks terrible. It looks absolutely terrible. And and I think, you know, Disney is just assuming that they can do live action versions of their animated movies now, and they'll all make a ton of money.
Right.
The thing about Aladdin, though, that people love that movie. People really, that's a beloved movie. Well, a lot of the old, you know, cartoons that they're turning into live action.
Right.
You know, Dumbo's one of my favorite movies of all time. Not the terrible Tim Burton version, but the original. But I really think that they're overestimating what this thing is going to do. And I really don't think Will Smith is going to be a big draw, I got to say.
But that's the thing, Nick, is that the reason why Aladdin is so beloved is because of one reason.
Robin Williams. Absolutely.
You know, Robin Williams, I mean, yes, okay, it's got some nice songs in it. His character is well-drawn. It's a very entertaining film. But a lot of that is Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. No. There's no question about it.
That is the absolute hook of that movie when people, you know, it's the genie. It's all about the genie.
Exactly right.
And you're replacing him with Will Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I realized that it was on Broadway, you know, and you know, there were a couple of terrific actors, you know, played the genie on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But when people go and see this movie, they're going to think of the animated movie, not the Broadway show.
Absolutely.
And they're going to compare Will Smith to Robin Williams, and it ain't going to work.
Right. And fair or not fair, that's the thing.
That,
you know, like, Will Smith had to know what he was getting into.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that seems like one of those things, just like, hey, do you want to play the genie in Aladdin? Most actors go, no.
Yeah, no. No way. I wouldn't step into that role. Are you
kidding
me?
Absolutely not.
No way. It's an iconic role, you know?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. But and looking a couple of weeks away, is Godzilla going to beat Rocket Man, or is Rocket Man going to beat Godzilla?
Oh, I think Godzilla will have enough in the tank to beat Rocket Man.
You think so?
Yeah, no, I think Godzilla is, handily win, because I think Rocket Man's going to do fairly well.
You know,
that Bohemian Rhapsody crowd is going like, what rocker can we do a biopic on next?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So I think that Rocket Man is going to do fairly well, but Godzilla, I think, will probably double its opening weekend.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see Godzilla. It looks ridiculous. I just can't wait. And I'm curious about Rocket Man. You know, I realize that the credited director of Bohemian Rhapsody is not the guy who directed it,
right?
But the guy who directed Rocket Man. And I'm curious about it. And I have more faith in this one because the subject matter of the movie is alive. And will not be, you know, and is actually, he likes the movie, as opposed to, you know, what they did with Freddie Mercury's, life, which was just a travesty. But I'm curious about the movie. And, but Godzilla is the one that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah. I think that's going to do fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, next week is the one I'm looking forward to for next week is Booksmart. No, there's no question.
Yeah, you should.
And by the way, the Red Band trailer for The Good Boys.
Oh my God, Nick.
Oh my God. I almost fell out of my chair laughing.
The one with the Seth Rogen introduction.
Oh, yeah.
They're like the kid can't watch the trailer of the movie that they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that trailer is fantastic.
It's amazing. I can't wait to see
that. And the movie delivers on all of that and then some.
I mean, it just sounds, it seems like a really nice bookend for, you know, you got Booksmart 1 week and then you got The Good Boys a couple of weeks later. And I'm looking forward to both of them. I think they're both going to be like great R-rated comedies.
So, yes.
And I love the fact that Lisa Kudrow and Will Forte play the parents.
Yes.
play the parents in Booksmart. I don't know why that makes me that makes me crack up. So, all right, well, all right, Eric. Well, everybody should still get their tickets for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is happening all the way through Thursday.
Yes.
Stay busy, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, man.
All right, there you go. There's Eric Childress, everybody. Check out the Chicago Critics Film Festival through the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets now for all the really great screenings and the really great guests that are going to be a part of it. All right, we'll take a break right here on 720 WGN. More after this.